And good morning. Thank you, JP, for the kind introduction. Good morning, everyone. Oh, you know, we only have just a brief moment in time here this morning. You and me, let's make it count. This program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. I only have like 57 minutes and 41 seconds to get the job done. So why don't we do it this morning? Why don't we spend some quality time together and discuss those things that can help move the needle in a positive direction? I think Thursday, that was 2 days ago, to me was a very important day for many reasons. Number one, I forgot to turn my ringer off. I just walked in here from outside, maybe 4 minutes ago. And when I looked toward the horizon, you know, toward the eastern sky, it almost seemed a little bit surreal or ethereal, because I could look at the pink on the sky, and I thought to myself, Roy, that looks like it's more fitting for a sundown and not a sunrise. So it just looked different. But anyway, today's a brand new day. We get to wipe the slate clean and start afresh. But going back to Thursday morning, I want to say that day I had three individuals. I'm talking about real people that were right in front of me. And the first two, when they were trying to just be open and real about what they're going through, I think maybe the first visit was about half tears, and the second visit was probably, the entire visit was about crying and trying to release some toxic emotions. But for just a brief moment, I could look into those two people that were hurting, and I could see that these tears were because they were feeling things that they probably hadn't been able to express and feel before. Maybe that's why women live a little bit longer than men, is because they can be just a little bit more real with their feelings and their emotions. But in this one particular lady, I could really see that what she really, really wanted was unconditional acceptance. And as she told me her story, I realized real quick that that's not what she had ever gotten before. Oh no. It was the exact opposite. What she's received in the past, or maybe even, you know, from the present through the past, was harsh judgment, unacceptance, having to continually perform to meet a certain person's expectations. You know what those things do? They do a very good job of generating one particular chemical that comes from your body. It's called cortisol. And everybody that would probably listen to my program would probably say they're a little bit familiar with cortisol. Cortisol, you could probably say, is a stress hormone. I think that's fair. Now, do we actually need it? Yes, we need it. You can't live without it. But you just need a certain amount of it. Not too much and not too little. If you have the Goldilocks just right amount of it, everything moves along very efficiently in the human body. And the result is, you have radiant health. You feel very good emotionally. What happens if you have too much cortisol? Well, I think that cortisol has been most appropriately been labeled the hormone or the chemical of fear. And when I say fear, if you ask me, Dr. Morgan, what are the two emotions, the two basic emotions that are really expressed in our reality here in the universe? Well, one would be love. And under love, you'd probably have all the subtitles that we would read about in the fruits of the Spirit in the New Testament, right? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. Basically, anything else you want to add to that list that would be considered good and positive. Right? Mm-hmm. What's the other emotion? Well, that other emotion is fear. And I can tell you, fear kills people. It may be a very slow, painful death, but it kills people. And under the heading of the emotion fear, we have anger, bitterness, resentment, jealousy, envy, hate. What else can I add to it? I think that probably covers it. So these two oppose each other. So back to cortisol for a second. Too much cortisol, literally, you feel like you're being ripped to shreds on the inside. When you have cortisol, you feel uneasy. You have angst. You experience anxiety. Maybe on one level, you could experience a most horrific panic attack. If you asked me if I've ever had a panic attack, I'd say no. But I talked to a young man the other day that was having one. And was his real? Oh my goodness. What did he want? He wanted relief. There's a business here in Jacksonville. They sell tobacco products. That's all I'll say. But I find the people that run the business, they are real. They are nice. They are more than sincere. They are what I would call just really, really enjoyable people to be around. I know that may sound strange coming from me, but that's the way that I feel about it. And these people are so kind, and they're so non-judgmental, which that's always a very attractive feature in a person, not wondering when the other shoe's going to fall or drop and you're going to be judged by somebody. But if I were to ask them point blank, what is the main number one reason why somebody comes to your tobacco shop to visit it? Well, I get the same answer every time I've asked. Everyone that walks the door is looking for something to relieve anxiety. Okay? What is anxiety? Well, it's not love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control, because it's the opposite. It's fear, baby. And so you're living your life on this continuum right now. If I stretch out my left arm all the way to the left, to the tip of my fingertip, that's going to represent the expression of too much cortisol. And cortisol is a hormone of fear, or the chemical of fear. If I go as far to the right as I can, almost like you're using the idea as far as the east is from the west, but if I go all the way to the right, there is a chemical that is produced by your brain or in the pituitary gland. It's quite interesting. It's called oxytocin. Sometimes oxytocin is known as the chemical of the experience of love. So we've got cortisol, which is pure fear, and we've got oxytocin, which would be pure love, if you'll just let me work through my analogy here. You can't have both winning at the same time. So this is usually the way it is. It's like a seesaw or a teeter-totter. You've got cortisol far to the left, that's fear, and at the other end of the seesaw, you've got oxytocin. Now you tell me, which one do you want to win? Well, I already know the answer to that. That's a rhetorical question. It's kind of dumb for me to ask, but you get where I'm coming from, right? So in this short moment that we call life on this Saturday morning, what I want to do is I want to give you just some very simple ideas on how we can start to win the battle against fear. Now, this is only from one simplistic perspective. I cannot cover the topic in its entirety. It takes too long. But, you know, as long as we're human beings and we're living here on this planet, we're walking the earth, you're going to be an emotional being. There's going to be a mental or an intellectual aspect to your life that's not the same as emotions. It's a different perspective. And then yet there's another one. We are spiritual beings. You cannot deny that. I mean, you can deny that. You're not going to get real far if you do. So we're emotional beings, intellectual, or if you want to say mental, I'm okay with that too. We're spiritual. But yet there's another component here. It's the physical. I love the verse in Psalm 139 that says, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. and maybe it's two or three verses down. I may have gotten this wrong, but it says, "And all my parts were recorded in the books." I do not know where that book is. I haven't had access to it. I haven't been able to check it out from the library because it doesn't exist here on Earth. But isn't that interesting that every one of your parts, maybe your pituitary even, maybe your left kidney, maybe the cells that make up your nose. I don't know why I said that. But they're recording a book. Which, if they're recording a book, you know what that means. That means you have an extremely high value. And so that also means that if you have value, then your life has meaning. But not just a small meaning, a great meaning. And so I told this story, I think maybe two times, but I'm going to tell it one more time. Back in February of this year, it was a cold morning. I normally don't wear a coat. This day was no different. And so as I was walking, you don't know what my habit is, but I park as far out in the parking lot as I can so I can walk it in. I know it's not much, but I just like to walk, and it feels good. And there's something refreshing about the cool air on your face. And so as I'm walking up to the front of the store, this is before the COVID-19 mess hit, something wasn't right. You know, how your senses go off and you think, okay, what's the deal here? Well, obviously, I had scanned something and I just didn't process it efficiently, which is not totally uncommon with me. And I said, something's not right here. And I looked over far to the right, kind of behind my peripheral vision, and there was a woman that was grasping and holding on to one of those concrete pillars with a metal pole. And on the top of the pole, it said handicap parking. So I'm going, oh, great. And so I walked over to her, and I was probably 20 yards away at the time. But when I walked over to her, I said, ma'am, are you okay? And she says, no, I'm not. And I said, what's wrong? She said, I had a stroke 3 weeks ago. And she said, I needed food. I came here to get groceries, and I can't make it into the store. I'm going, okay. I said, ma'am, do you want me to go get one of those carts for you? You know what I mean, those electric, start to call them like a handicap shopping cart, but I don't know what it's called. Let's just say it's one that you can shop for groceries with a little basket in the front, and it's battery-powered. I'm sure you've seen those before. Anyway, you know what? When I offered, I said, let me go get one of those carts for you, she kind of just very quickly got right in my face, and she said, no, I don't want that. I said, well, what do you want? She said, I want to make it in the store on my own. What does that do to melt your heart? It did mine. And I said, I'll help you. So we held each other kind of arm in arm, side by side, and I noticed that she was kind of gripping me tightly, like she was relying on me to be her balance. Or for her balance. And I thought that was just fine, because that was easy to do. And as we kind of walked and moved very slowly, because you can imagine, her gait was not right, her steps were not real secure, and you could tell she was probably afraid. And you know what? I didn't even ask all the right questions. I wish I had, but I can't have a do-over. But I wish I'd asked her more about her life. And I said, so you need groceries? She said, yes. She said, I wish I'd asked her, do you have anybody in your life that loves you? Is anybody, do you have a relative that can come get food for you? No, I didn't do that. I thought of that genius, you know, question 20 minutes after I saw her. And, you know, that's the only time I've had contact with her. That one day in February. I think it was February the 16th. But as we were walking toward the store, she just said, I'm just really low in supplies. And I just told myself, I've got to get up and go to the store. And she was just telling me her story, how, you know what, I didn't do any of the medical talk with her. I didn't say, tell me what kind of stroke you had here. Was it an ischemic stroke, or was it did you have a clot, or did you have a broken blood vessel? I didn't do any of that. Probably should have, because I would have been on autopilot. But she just started telling me how it's just been really a real struggle just being able to move. I mean, what do you think about that? You want to command your body to take a secure step forward without falling. Maybe that's why she was gripping the pole, is because she... You know what? I don't even remember where the car was. I have no recollection of where her vehicle was parked. Because when I see it in my mind, I just see her gripping the pole. I don't even see a car in my mind. Isn't that weird? But she was just telling me how extremely important it was for her to make it from the parking lot into the store. Then she would get to the motorized shopping cart, which I helped her do that. I remember her sitting down. It was along the northern wall at the far left entrance. But I guess one of the main points I'm getting to is, in the moment, if I had walked into the store completely fearful and afraid because I had cortisol coursing through my veins, and then in that brief moment, just me and this lady that had the stroke, I had completely forgotten all about whatever I was dealing with that February morning. And instead, guess what was winning? That's right, it was oxytocin. And so when you let go of yourself and you actually focus on somebody else and what they're going through and seeing them for who they really are, of course she had no choice. She was going to be super real anyway. Sometimes we have walls up and we don't let people know who we are, but sometimes those walls come down. And when those walls come down, you can kind of take a closer, deeper look into another human being. And you can see that they're real. And you can see that they have these basic needs that need to be met. I'm not talking about what a person wants here. I'm talking about their basic need for unconditional acceptance and love. All of us need that. But my point is, when you do some semi-kind act for somebody else, that causes your pituitary to kind of, if you want to say, release or pulse or squirt out some oxytocin, well, that'll do it right there. I can tell you how to make this Saturday a better day for yourself. The way that you make today a better day is you have less cortisol expression and more oxytocin. Well, this is where the nerd in me comes out, because I like this stuff. But if you hug somebody, that's been shown to release oxytocin, but let me give you a little caveat and tell you how it really works. When you are held or you hold somebody, I mean on a level that they like and that you like. I don't mean the type of weird hug where, you know what the woman told me? Going back to the one that cried nonstop, she said all she would do is try to lay her head gently over on the head of her, or on the shoulder of her husband, because she wanted to be held. And his response is, that's weird, I don't like that, what's wrong with you? And I thought to myself, and then she would say another time she just wanted to hold his hand, and he would refuse that. And I thought to myself, oh great. But you know what she's wanting? She just wants to have a little bit of that feeling of unconditional love, and you get that through oxytocin. Okay. And so for a moment, when I walked that lady into the room, oh my goodness, I'd forgotten all about my problems. I had oxytocin. Oxytocin makes you feel good. Now, I know that you can take crack cocaine, or maybe some heroin, or methamphetamines, and you can get some oxytocin. But all that stuff is addictive. It's highly addictive. Is getting a hug addictive? Well, I'll let you decide. I'm going to say not like a drug. But in the studies that I've read, when they've done testing to see how much it takes to produce oxytocin, it almost always starts around the 30-second mark. So if you were holding hands with somebody I'd say, technically, this may sound different, but 30 seconds is a starting point. But if you know somebody's hurting and they're not in a good place, then you might want to go with a hug that lasts for 30 seconds or longer. We're talking about a hug that just says love and acceptance. That's all it's talking about. But you'll start getting oxytocin. I have read that if you want more oxytocin, then maybe you should consider eating chocolate. I can tell you, to me, it's almost so comical. I had a patient the other day, and they asked me the question. They said, I need to know, Dr. Morgan, if there's anything that I'm eating that is completely messing up my body. Is it counterproductive? Am I allergic to it? Is it toxic to me? And when I went through these foods, I said, yeah, there is one right here. It's dairy products. And they said, I knew that. I just wanted to see if you could figure it out. I said, okay, thanks for putting me to the test. But anyway, I said, you know what? When I test you against pure chocolate, that's not an issue. And you could look at her face, and she just instantly started glowing, going, thank the good Lord. But you know what? Sometimes people intuitively, they know. They do. Chocolate's been shown to increase your body's secretion and production of that chemical called oxytocin. Which, if you want to say oxytocin is the love hormone or the love chemical, well, I can't really argue with you. Another thing that's been shown to release oxytocin and help get rid of cortisol is if you take your time and you give it to somebody else. And here's how you can do that. You could write a nice note of appreciation. It could be something like this. Sister Jones, I haven't seen you at church since the COVID-19 fiasco. Did I just say fiasco? Never mind. Since COVID-19 had started. I just wanted you to know how much you meant to me, and I miss your smiling face. And if there's anything that you need, let me know. I'll come over and I'll cook you a meal. I'll mow your grass for you. But when you write one of these lovely handwritten notes, and you have to take some of your precious time that you're given in order to express that, well, guess what you're doing? On one level, you're winning. Not only do you increase your levels of oxytocin, but you increase Sister Jones's levels of oxytocin also. Well, that's called a win-win situation, isn't it? Is there anything selfish about that, wanting more oxytocin? I don't think so. Now, in the real world, here's what you can do. Holding hands and touching on a good level, that all improves your pituitary's ability to release oxytocin. I mean, isn't the world stressed enough as it is? Do we need any more stress? I don't think so. You can hug someone. You can say kind words to them. You can give them chocolate. I know, a person's probably thinking, do I really want to hug someone for 30 seconds? No, that's too weird. And there's people that say that. Okay, you're not there. That's fine. I'm not judging you. But at the end of the day, you have got to ask yourself, what do I want to win here? Do I want cortisol to win? Do I need more stress and anxiety and fear? You know the answer to that. I don't have to answer that for you. And so, maybe today could be the starting point of maybe starting those wheels of your imagination churning just a little bit toward what you want. Well, if you're going to make it through this world and you're going to come to a point of growth and learning and possibilities and evolution toward that which is good, or evolving toward that's good, then we may have to take a little bit of a risk and start trying to push out the cortisol and start to emphasize more oxytocin. What would happen if somebody told you there was a little baby at the hospital and there was no one to hold the baby and they wanted you to come and volunteer to hold the baby? Well, wouldn't that melt your heart? Well, I promise you, when you're holding the baby, you're releasing oxytocin for yourself and the baby's releasing oxytocin. That's a love and a bonding hormone. These things are so critical when kids are just little bitty infants. It can change them the rest of their life. What would it be like to have all the love that you truly need? And when I say need, you need it like you need oxygen. You need love like you need food. It's essential to life. You could say, I don't like it. Well, you're lying to yourself. Everybody likes these good feelings. Does anybody like too much cortisol? Well, in a perverse way, yeah. There's some people that do. They have this cortisol resistance addiction thing going on because of toxicity. And so they'll actively seek out things that are toxic and bad. That's a topic for another day. Anyway, I just looked at the clock. I've been rambling on for 25 minutes. If you would like to join me on the radio, yes, I have a bias toward things that are natural, that God has made for us, that are good for us. And we want to figure out how to make these things work. Why don't we find out together, what is it that your body needs? Do you need vitamin D? Yes, you need vitamin D, like you need fresh air and water to drink. What would happen to the human body if you didn't have enough vitamin D? Well, I think we can answer that. Let's go ahead and go to the phone lines. Let's find out what this what's going on in this person's life. Good morning and welcome to the program. I'm Dr. Morgan.
Yes, good morning. I'm calling on behalf of for my mom. She's 84, and generally she's in good health. She does have a little bit of high blood pressure, and she does take two blood pressure pills, diltiazem and metoprolol. And she had a spell several years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. They told her she had a TIA, and they put her on a baby aspirin. Well, you know, I don't want her taking that, and she doesn't really want to take it. And she is taking Hawthorne supplement from the Granary.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good choice, by the way.
Yes, yes. And so, and you've seen her before. And I just wanted to, you know, I don't want to tell her to stop taking it, but yet I work in the medical field. I see people put on all these blood thinners, bleeding out all the time, and it's just heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. They go in GI bleeds, and it's just unbelievable. But anyway,
I don't know if you've ever heard this information before, but there was a study performed maybe, I'm going to say 20 years ago. I just can't remember at this point. But 20 years ago, they did a study, and the title of this article was, How Much Blood is Lost When You Take a Baby Aspirin? And so, mm-hmm. obviously, when I saw the title, I said, oh, man, I've got to read this. And so I'm just going to cut to the chase here and tell you that every human being is a little bit different. People have strengths, and they have weaknesses. And so here's what the study said. It said every time you take a baby aspirin, you're going to lose somewhere between a half of a teaspoon all the way up to a tablespoon and a half. And I realized as soon as I say that, I mean, of blood. And so I kind of said to myself, you mean that there's such unique variability among, you know, women and men that if one person takes an aspirin, bam, they've just lost a half a teaspoon of blood. But in other people, oh, man, they are a little bit more predisposed to losing a heck of a lot more. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about what I'm saying? Does a tablespoon and a half of blood loss, does that sound like that might put a strain on your ability to make enough red blood cells that day to replace what you lost?
Yes, most definitely. And she's been so fatigued. And she's like,
What are we supposed to learn from that if your mom is really fatigued? Maybe she doesn't have enough blood to transport oxygen and generate energy. At least that's what I would have to think from what you're telling me.
I know.
So let's rethink this, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, number one. Now you got to realize I'm in a little bit of a dicey situation here. I'm not a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. I'm a chiropractor. I'm a nutritionist. I have a degree in human biology. I thought that would be extra impressive if I told you I had a bachelor's of science in human biology, that would give me credibility.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just joking. But anyway, what I was trying to say is, I cannot legally tell your mama, ditch the aspirin and do this over here, but let me talk to you in such a way where you can come to your own conclusion, all right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Let me talk about the facts as I understand them and as I see them. As a human being ages on this planet, they tend to generate more and more inflammation.
Yep.
That's just been proven.
Yep.
You know, it's not rocket science. It's been proven. So as you age, things are going to be a little bit more challenging on your blood. And, you know, when I read in the book of Leviticus, and I want to say it's chapter 17, verse 11, it says the life is in the blood. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. That is a true statement. And so in my mind, I kind of think of the blood as this highly unique, sophisticated organ system. It is unlike anything else. And a red blood cell, it is a very sophisticated cell. I mean, I almost have like this unreal desire to learn more about a red blood cell than probably the average person does, because I'm so fascinated by the complexity and the sophistication, the design. But did you know that the red blood cell, it does not contain a nucleus, but it has this vital life force. And so your mama's blood, it is going to carry an ocean of pure life to every cell in her body.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I checked, no blood equals no life.
Yes.
Sometimes when I have a person on the on my examination table and I feel their pulse and I'm going, well, you're not dead, are you? I know that's a bad joke. But your mama, her life force is the quality of her blood. And so what I want to do is I want to think, what can we do to radically improve the quality of her life force or her blood? And I'm telling you, blood is the life force of your mama. So here's what I want to consider. If you want to outright destroy the quality of the blood, then you'll eat a whole bunch of junk food and refined sugar. I know your mama doesn't do that.
No, she does not.
But what we have to do is we have to eat things that have life in them. And so this morning when I opened my jar of sauerkraut, I know that this is not going to turn some people on, but when I took a big honking forkful, just think about the farmer with a hay fork, and he's trying to scoop up a whole bunch of hay to throw it up in the barn so the cows can eat in the wintertime. That's what I look like with my sauerkraut. I just pile that sucker up, that's living. When you eat sauerkraut that has not been pasteurized, it has this vital, living life force. And also, one of the things that I really dig about sauerkraut is it has what are called prebiotics. I don't know if you've ever heard the term prebiotics as opposed to maybe probiotics.
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. We're on the same page here. But prebiotics, what they do is they have a unique ability to change the terrain of your body. And when I say change the terrain, I sort of covered this topic a couple weeks ago talking about the two types of bacteria that live inside of you that are always opposing each other. You've got the Firmicutes, which tend to be toxic, and you got the Bacteroides that tend to be really, really good.
Yes,
and I knew you were a smart cookie the moment that I picked up your call this morning. But when you eat sauerkraut or olives, or you have fermented food, just like a woman called me the day, she said, can my 6-year-old child have some kombucha? I said, yes, it's a living substance. So I know this topic may sound a little bit weird, but, you know, you've got to eat things alive if you're going to have a vital life force. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and she eats quite a bit of fruit, quite a bit of vegetables, and she has lean meats. She doesn't eat sugar, but on rare occasion, she doesn't have wheat.
Good. Well, you know what fruit she needs that has life in it right now?
Which one? Lemon.
Well, that's my first choice. You know what my second choice is?
What?
In the Old Testament, there is a description in the book of Leviticus on what the garment that the high priest would wear as he would enter the Holy of Holies.
Pomegranate.
Ah, you got it. Bingo. And so embroidered into the robe. Now, I'm not telling you I fully understand all that, but I'm telling you it has life force. There was a recent study that was performed on men. These were only on men only, so I realize that may not be fair. But these men had heart attacks, and they were bedfast in the hospital. And all they did was they gave these men just a little bit of pomegranate juice. And what I think was it was somewhere between 2 and 4 ounces. Well, that's not much, is it?
No.
You want to guess what happened? The men that had pomegranate juice, as opposed to those that did not get it, they were able to leave the hospital 40% faster. And I thought to myself, Roy, if there was a drug that could do what the pomegranate juice could do, it'd be the top-selling drug in the hospital. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So your mama needs a little bit of pomegranate juice to add vital life energy to the quality of her blood to keep it from sticking together. Now, I'm going to say something, but I can't make any medical claims because that's wrong.
Yeah.
But there's a type of a natural occurring oil that has maybe one of the highest concentrations of what's called gamma linoleic acid. Sometimes it's called GLA for short. Mm-hmm. And you find some of this in barrage oil. You find it in evening primrose oil. But the one that I think is concentrated and efficient, that is called black currant seed oil or black currant. You ever heard of that before?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I'm not trying to tell you right now that if she took black currant seed oil, that that would completely erase the need for baby aspirin. That's because I can't legally.
I know.
So you understand what I'm suggesting to you, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Okay. The next thing is, you've got to make sure that blood flows at a very high velocity and a very high speed through the body, just like, and I know I'm sort of joking as I say this, but it's reality. If you and I were in a plane crash and we walked away from it, actually, I'm going to say if your husband was there too, because I think I've seen a picture of your husband before. He's like an ultra good looking guy, isn't he?
No, I don't have one.
Sorry, I botched that one. Yeah. Never mind. I was trying to give you a compliment, but anyway, but what I was going to say is if we were in a plane crash, like in Alaska's outback, and we had to walk 150 miles to get to like civilization again, if we were both dying of thirst and I said, hey, looky here, here's a beaver pond, why don't we drink some of this water? You would say, no, do not do that. That stuff is toxic. You're going to get beaver fever. You're going to get sick. You're going to have projectile vomiting and diarrhea from parasites. Well, we know that wouldn't be good. But if we came along the side of a mountain and we could see a snow-covered peak and the water's flowing very fast down the mountain, well, you know as well as I do, water is clean and good when it moves fast.
Yes,
the speed that water flows equals cleanliness and health and life force. So we would drink the melting ice, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and I know she needs to start walking more. She knows that. And I told her, I said, you've got to get your blood moving. You've got to start walking, you know. And you know, she'll always say, well, it was too hot yesterday. And I said, well, you know, you got to still get out earlier. You know what I mean? You know how it is. So,
well, and
I know she needs to walk.
I think you probably heard me talk about the study where they said how many gallons of blood does a person filter a day. And so when they went into a nursing home facility where somebody was more sedentary, they found out they only filter about 200 gallons of blood a day. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, well, that's fabulous. Well, what I'm referring to is the same 8 pints that just keep passing through the kidneys over and over again. But in the real world, you need about 2,000 gallons going through your kidneys a day. And when you can do that, your blood's clean. So my point that I'm building toward is when the blood is dirty, it becomes sticky.
Yes.
And so one group of health professionals would say, oh, my goodness, we just tested this 84-year-old woman's blood, and it's sticky and dirty. Well, what are we going to do with that? We're going to give her blood thinners, or we're going to give her aspirin. But what I'm saying is we don't want to do that. What we want to do is we want to say, why is the blood dirty and sticky?
Yes.
And when the blood's dirty and sticky, you got to get the body moving. And so here's my next point right here. There was a study in Japan, or from Japan, back in the 1960s. And what they did was they looked at the blood of people that were workers on the side of Mount Fuji. And guess what they were harvesting on the side of Mount Fuji? They had Fuji apples growing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, have you ever tasted a Fuji apple?
Oh, yeah.
They're good, aren't they?
Yes.
And so these workers, as part of their wages, they could literally eat unlimited apples. Now, I'm not trying to tell you, I know what living in Japan was like if you were like a farm worker in the year 1961, but I'm guessing they probably still quite hadn't recovered from the horrific effects of World War II. Would you guess so?
Right.
Okay, so... Now, I know this sounds strange, because when I looked at it, I said, really? But they said the average number of apples these farm workers would eat every day was 10 apples a day. I thought 10 apples. Well, you know, I shouldn't laugh at that, because most likely, if you're eating 10 apples a day, that means all the other food that you could be eating probably just didn't exist or it was scarce.
Right.
And so if you fill your body with 10 apples a day, that means you're hungry while you're picking apples anyway. But anyway, one of the points that I want to direct you toward is there's an old phrase called an apple a day keeps who away?
Doctor.
That's right. And yeah. So just under the skin of an apple, there is a compound that's found in very high concentrations. I pronounce it as quercetin. I've heard somebody say quercetin. I don't say that because I'm from Texas. But you know, potato, potato, right? Yes. And so quercetin is found just under the peeling of apples, and it's been shown to very positively, not the same way that the polyphenols in pomegranate, or the one called resveratrol that's found like in... yes, exactly. Now, right. If you said, what about a white wine? I think the levels of resveratrol are actually found to be quite low in a white wine. So if you consume a wine that has more color to it, that's where you're going to get this deep nutrient density of this polyphenol compound called resveratrol.
Right.
And so when they did experiments with rats, they tried to damage the small capillaries that would feed oxygen and nutrition to the brain. But when they gave these rats resveratrol, now the amount they gave them was very substantial. I do not know at this point in time what the amount they gave the rats, how I'm going to transfer that or tell you what that would look like for a human being adult that weighs more than a rat. I don't know that number right now. But they gave them a lot of it. But what happened was, the ways they gave rats in this one experiment a compound that would destroy the microcirculation, and so the rats forgot how to perform a task through a maze, so they know that they wiped out their memory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They gave them a lot of resveratrol that comes from the skins of grapes and is concentrated like in the dark red wine.
Right.
And all of a sudden, these rats would regain the ability almost as if by magic when they gave them a substantial amount of resveratrol. So when I read that study, I thought to myself, oh my goodness, what are the implications with the health of the brain of a human being? And so your mom is locked in this battle. She's got too much inflammation. What are we going to do to counter it?
Yeah.
And so I can't tell her, stop taking the blood thinner. But what I can tell her is, be open to the idea that we can improve cerebral blood flow and oxygenation and circulation,
right,
and vital life force by using things like pomegranate, the quercetin that comes from the skins of the apple.
Right.
The other thing in that one study from Japan, they were showing that potassium keeps the blood very, very clean. So, like, I talked to a woman yesterday on the phone as I was driving home from work, and she's telling me she had to go to the hospital because she thought she was having a heart attack. And, of course, before I got to her on the phone, I thought to myself, oh my goodness, this is not good that she had a heart attack. So I was kind of mentally prepared, but she said, no, that wasn't it. She said, but my blood work's all fine. I said, okay, well, what was your potassium level? She said that was low. I'm going, well, that doesn't mean everything was fine. And so there's
exactly
a reason why potassium's low.
Yep.
And so sometimes a person can have so much stress in their life, you know, mental stress, maybe even emotional and physical and the other stuff, that they can burn through their potassium and use that stuff up at a faster rate than what they can replace it from eating things like sweet potatoes or avocados. Now, this lady, I was telling her, I said, okay, well, if your potassium is low, this is our play right here. She said, well, it's okay, I'm taking potassium supplements. I'm going, no, that is not the way to do this. You'll never get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But so I told her, I said, what do you think about eating one green salad a day? Because if you look at one green salad, you're probably going to get close to 5,000 milligrams of potassium. That is a perfect huge dose. I don't think I've ever heard of somebody overdosing on potassium by eating a salad. Have you?
No, when she eats quite a few salads, you know, every
good
week.
Good.
She does. Yeah.
Now, but what we got to do is the very thing that you said, if we want the blood becoming cleaner and flowing at a higher velocity where it can keep from being clumpy and sticky and dirty, we got to get your mama moving.
Yes,
and
I
so
know.
If we look at this one metric the quality of her blood is going to be based on her ability to stimulate her muscles to grow. It is the number one metric. I know I sound like a broken record.
No,
the strength of your mama is going to determine how things go. So if she loses enough muscle mass and becomes overly weak or frail, or
she's kind of there.
But you're her loving daughter, and so you're going to say, "Mom, right. You don't have to listen to what I say. Dr. Morgan just broke it down for me."
Yes.
And you're gonna get one of those electric cattle prods. I'm joking. That was bad. Is she listening to me right now?
No, she said she can't get reception in her kitchen on her radio. So
where does she live?
Mineola.
Okay, well that's okay. Well, Mineola is just a little bit more. Okay, but if I remember correctly, your mother's like 6'4". Is that correct?
Or is it
4'11"? Okay.
Yeah, 4'11", 5'11".
Okay. No, I was just joking.
Yeah.
So in this situation, your mama has to sit down and she has to use her wits about her and say, okay, what's my play here? What's my plan? And so she may have to start writing down a sheet of paper. What am I going to do here? And it may be everything from doing a few body squats, lunges, and walking. But I think the quality of her life is going to be based with her going outside.
Yes. She does go outside and work in the yard a lot.
Oh, I wouldn't take for that good.
She loves it. She loves that, yeah.
No, I know who your mama is, and she is a most lovely human being. I love her.
Thank you.
She is so sweet.
Yes.
And personally, I think that I don't really know this like it's a fact, but I might be her favorite doctor.
Yes. And I just want her off that darn aspirin, you know, because I know that she is losing blood, whether it's a teaspoon or a tablespoon, we don't know, but, you know.
But she is.
I know. It breaks my heart. And
well, the number one deal breaker when it comes to the health of a woman is going to be anemia. And so most likely she's anemic, and that's what you're describing to me.
I know.
Well, so. what would I have to do to convince you to cook a T-bone steak perfectly and deliver it to her? Because everything that she needs to build high-quality blood, it is found in a T-bone steak or a ribeye or a New York strip or a filet.
Yeah, and one other thing, they recently have her liver enzymes were elevated just a bit. And so they're doing an ultrasound next week on her liver to see if she's got a little bit of a fatty liver. And I told her, I said, when you have a sluggish liver, that means your blood's too thick. And
you're right.
And, you know, and she's eating a little bit too much cheese. She really doesn't eat a lot of fatty stuff other than cheese. She loves cheese. So I told her.
Which one is her favorite? I'm just curious.
Well, unfortunately, she'll use that shredded from Walmart kind of stuff, and that's not
how does she eat that? Is that putting it like on broccoli, or does she just grab it and eat it?
No,
like
she'll put it on her salad. She'll put it on her salad. So.
Well, just take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. I was watching this video from National Geographic on YouTube, and they said they had been able to clock a bluefin tuna hitting 70 miles an hour under the ocean. I thought to myself, that's impossible. How could a fish go 70 miles an hour? But do you realize how much power and strength that fish has to push, to cut and slice through the water and hit 70? You might as well say they're going Mach 2.
Yeah.
I mean, has a fish ever broken the sound barrier or made it a sonic boom under the ocean? I don't know, but maybe a tuna has. But what do you think the Japanese like to eat their raw tuna, because it has so much vital life force and strength? But what I'm going to say is going to probably come across weird, because I think I tried to make a joke out of the new book that just came out that's very, very factual. It's called The Sardine Solution. I thought to myself, yeah, ain't nobody going to buy that book because nobody likes sardines. But sardines, they have a very rare substance called RNA, ribonucleic acid.
Right.
So we got to give your mama what she needs, and what she needs is she needs stuff that's strong. She's got to eat meat if she's going to correct this.
She does. So,
okay.
She does. Yeah, she eats her protein.
Well, I need her to eat some sardines.
Okay.
if she calls to complain, I'm going to screen her phone call and say to myself, I think I can put off taking her complaining phone call right now. Well, I thank you so much for your phone call. You are one loving daughter.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, I may have gone a little bit long on that. My apologies. I kind of get carried away. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257 if you want to call and ask a question. All right, good morning. Thanks for your patience. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan. I have a question. My husband just found out he has three degenerative
bulging discs. I got three bulging discs, Dr. Morgan. Is there anything...
Well, and the first comment I want to make is that is very rude of your disc to bulge on you. I don't think that's being loving and supporting of your body. So I'm going to blame your disc for just, you know, not doing a good job.
Right, brother.
All right, here's let's go ahead and tackle this real quick. Now that you've got three bulging discs, the question is, what are we going to do about it? So let me give you some recommendations.
Okay.
One of the studies that I read not that terribly long ago, I'm thinking like in the last 2 or 3 years, that left an impression on me was the use of glucosamine sulfate, chondroitin sulfate, in a substance called MSM. MSM is just like MSM. Did you get that?
Right. It's like M&M's with an S in the middle.
There you go. I don't know why you'd bring up an M&M's on. Are you talking about when you get really stressed and you're thinking, what can I eat?
Yeah, that's a stress pill.
Well, it's better than taking Xanax.
Yeah, I know.
So, no, MSM is a form of sulfur. I think it's called methyl sulfonyl methane. But anyway, look, okay. You see how easily distracted I am on a Saturday morning? This is horrible. Anyway, but in this study, what they did was they did an MRI. And on the MRI, it would show that in a man, there were three bulging discs. And so
That man was me. It happened yesterday.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. But in the study, we took your fresh MRIs, and the radiologist could actually measure the bulge. And he might say, for example, there is a 9-millimeter bulge on the left posterior central aspect of L4, L5. And so they could measure that. Now, in this study, this is all I want you to know. This man, meaning you, would commit to taking MSM, chondroitin sulfate, and glucosamine sulfate, and I'm almost positive that the follow-up MRIs were taken either at 18 months or somewhere between 18 and 24 months. That's probably, I really think I'm being sort of accurate on that one right there.
Okay.
I don't remember every number I read, but I think I'm telling you straight up what the study was. So let's just say we use 18 months. That's a year and a half, right?
Right.
Okay, so at the 18-month mark, they did a follow-up MRI, and they said, oh, my goodness, we did not anticipate this. And you're thinking to yourself, well, what did they find? All those discs began to shrink back into place. Hmm. Now, are you willing to buy into that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just talked to you. I didn't even do everything you said, but I...
What?
Talk to you about.
What kind of a person are you? Everybody does everything I say.
I know.
You're the first person I've met that hasn't done all my recommendations.
Hey, I was going to ask you, too, real quick, just as a side before you have to go off here. My varicose veins that I talked to you within the last few months or so, we called up, I don't know. And I've just been wearing these socks, and I've come off of spinach. Because I passed a small kidney stone, and I found out I was eating too much raw spinach, you know. And I don't know if that had something to do with the size of my varicose veins, but my varicose veins are already shrinking in a few months.
Good job. That's called healing and repair and rejuvenation. I'm proud of
you. Yeah, I can't believe it. And my kids even noticed it. So,
well, isn't this great? Way to go, man.
Yeah.
I've only got a second, but you need me to. I need you to tell you the other really important thing. This has value.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, do you feel like that you're open to the possibility of taking glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate, and MSM for the purpose of trying to repair and heal the bulging disc? Okay.
Sure.
This next one, I cannot find research to explain it the way that I want it to be explained, so I just have to give it to you as this is what I think, but I can't prove it scientifically. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I heard her in the background. Your wife is so positive, I've noticed.
Yeah, she's the one that got you on the phone, brother.
Thank you. Wait, and you, what'd you do, snatch it out of her hands?
Well, she kind of threw the phone at me.
Oh, she threw the phone at you. Okay. So there is a plant that's more like a cactus than anything else. It's called the aloe vera plant.
Okay.
And so if you had a bad burn on your finger from, like, your curling iron use that went wrong, you would say, what can I snap a little piece of the leaf off and rub that gelatinous portion of the aloe vera? And it would work like magic. You'd say, oh, my goodness, this is like the most healing plant of all time. But I truly believe, from my own personal experience, that aloe vera gel is a great rejuvenator of the disc. I really think that, but I cannot prove that scientifically, so you can take it all and use it however you wish.
Right. So you can't just point to a particular...
Yeah, aloe vera gel. That's what I'm saying.
And then something in the aloe vera that is connected
that goes without saying. I mean, obviously there's something in the aloe vera that works. I'm
right.
not saying I know exactly what that is to rejuvenate a disc, but if I had a bulging disc in my back... Buddy, I'd be taking aloe vera gel every day internally. I'd probably take three ounces.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is it in some kind of pill form, or you just take
no,
it?
No, no. You can buy a big honking quart bottle of it for like $7 at the store, but it's gel.
Right.
It's not the juice. It's the gel.
Right, the gel. Okay.
You know how gel is spelled? G.
E-G-E-L.
Yeah. That's because I'm forever having people, I could write it down and tell them, and they'll come back with a juice. And I said, gel. But, you know, and I've done, you know how many times I've done something like that where I looked at a product and said, this is what I want. And when I get out of the store, I'm going, that wasn't what I wanted. That was close.
No.
But I wanted the other one.
No, and it stands to reason that gel has things that a juice doesn't, because maybe they strained it out or something.
Yeah. So. There you go. Mm-hmm. I like the way you're thinking. Well, I appreciate your phone call so much. We're completely out of time, buddy.
Thank you, Roy. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. I hope you have a great day, and tell your wife she is super awesome for having the guts to call and then throw the phone at you.
I will, because that's why they call her a helpmate.
Well, good job.
Right, take care.
Hey, that's a good thing. Thanks. Hey, thanks for your phone call. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to Health Essentials. I've been your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. Lord willing, I will be back this time, 7 o'clock, Saturday morning next week. Thank you very much.